Moncrief on News Talk.
Welcome to this week's Bookshelf, and today we have Andrea Mara in the studio with us. She's number one Sunday Times, Irish Times and Kindle best-selling author. She sold more than 500,000 copies of her books worldwide. Four of them have also been shortlisted for Irish Crime Novel of the Year. Her most recent novel, Someone in the Attic, was released on June 6th in Ireland and in the UK, and it's going to be released in the US on August 20th. Marking her American debut. She's going to talk to us about her favourite books, her honourable mention, and the one that she is currently reading. Before that, an American debut must be a wonderful thing.
It is, and I've always been kind of obsessed with America and all things American. I think it's growing up watching American TV. Like, I grew up in Cork in the 80s and we had two channels, and so we watched a lot of The A-Team and The Fall Guy, and I think I just got obsessed with America. So I am extremely excited. I mean, also from a career point of view, yes.
Huge market. Huge.
Yeah.
Which was your favourite? Were you a Colt Seavers guy or were you a Hannibal and Murdoch guy?
Colt Seavers.
Guy, I've changed your gender. Movie. My apologies. Oh, is the movie any good?
It's great.
Is it?
Fabulous. Yeah, it's really, really good.
Let's go a little bit higher, Brad, because the reason you're here is not to talk about 80s action shows, but to talk about the books that sort of define or that help to define aspects of your life. The favourite book is what?
I am going to choose Big Magic by Elizabeth Gilbert, which is a nonfiction book, and I pretty much never read nonfiction at all. I'm 99% fiction, but this is a book that was recommended over and over when I was kind of just getting my bearings with writing, and I just thought, okay, they can't all be wrong. I'll pick up a copy and give it a go. And I remember reading it out in my back garden one sunny afternoon about 5 years ago and just devouring it because it all made so much sense. And I mean, part of it is because she was telling me what I wanted to hear. Like one of the things that really stuck with me, and I'm paraphrasing because I haven't read it in 5 years, but she said, in her opinion, there were three things that contribute. It's about creativity. And she said, there are three things that contribute to being successfully creative, like making a go of your creativity. And she said, they are luck, talent, and discipline. And I always remember she was kind of saying, look, luck is luck. You can't make it happen. And talent, you have talent or you don't. You can certainly work on talent. And I think we all know a lot more about talent now and this whole idea of 10,000 hours. And we know that you can actually become good at things if you work really hard at them. But to a certain extent, talent is something that people have or they don't. But then the third one was discipline. And she said, like, that's the one you have control over. So that's the one where you take ownership and you say, I'm going to work really hard. And that was music to my ears because I'm a very disciplined person. And I quite like the idea that that could help. I mean, that sounds very basic. But, you know, sometimes kind of unintentional gatekeepers can say things like that you can't write a book unless you have trauma in your life, or you can't create great art unless terrible things have happened to you, or that you're just born with talent and sorry, if you don't have it, you don't have it.
And also there is a sense in the creative industries, or a sense about the creative industries, which is totally untrue, that they are permission to be feckless, that you wander around until your muse strikes and then you write things down.
Yeah, whereas in actual fact, if you just decide what you're going to do and set your heart on it and set your goals and sit down and make it your business to do it, you can do it. And I mean, that's probably oversimplifying, but I think it's really important to know that hard work and discipline is a huge part of creativity. And it's not just being some kind of, as you say, this sort of feckless genius running around the place kind of doing whatever, how little they feel doing on any given day.
How do you then handle the days when the words don't flow easily? Do you say, I'll stop until it comes back? Or do you just push through and keep generating copy?
I push through, but that's a me thing. And I think there are other people who would say, get up and go for a walk. Like I'll set myself a low word count and just go, just get that done, because you can come back and delete it tomorrow, but you can't edit a blank page. So I would keep going.
Is there anything in Big Magic, How to Live a Creative Life and Let Go of Your Fear, for those who aren't thinking of the kind of transition that you made from financial industry into creativity.
Yeah, I think there's something for everyone, because one of her points is that she says we all need something that stops us eating the couch. So she said you need something in your life that will distract you from the everyday of being a carer for elderly parents, or a job that you like but don't love, or maybe a job you hate, or the humdrum of housework, or whatever it is. She said if we can all have something that we feel passionate about or that we love doing, that's good for all of us. So it's not just for people who want to make a career of something creative.
So the favourite book, Big Magic, How to Live a Creative Life and Let Go of Your Fear by Elizabeth Gilbert. Honourable mention then.
Something completely different is The Chimney Sweeper's Boy by Barbara Vine, which is a 1990s novel. So that's Barbara Vine writing, or Ruth Rendell writing in her pseudonym of Barbara Vine. And I remember reading it way back, probably around the time it came out in the late 90s. And I loved the fact that it was a crime novel, but there are no police detectives. It's not your... I had read a lot of detective and loved a lot of detective fiction and police procedurals. And this was one of the first crime novels I read, which was not about that, but just about an ordinary family. So it's about a man called Gerald Candless, who is an author, and he dies. And his grieving daughters and wife are dealing with the aftermath of his death in different ways. And his daughter, Sarah, decides that she's going to write his biography. So she starts to read up on her. Her father had never talked an awful lot about his childhood. So she starts trying to find out more and more about his early days before she was born. And of course, like in all the best crime novels, secrets come out and layers unfold as she discovers who her father really was. And I absolutely loved it back then. And I reread it just a couple of years ago, which is maybe why I picked it, because it's fresh in my mind.
Did it become a busman's holiday for you when you read it the second time? Were you able to immerse yourself, or did you see the mechanics of the crime novel happening?
I can always immerse myself. I know some people don't like to read crime when they're writing crime, but I'm okay to just completely set aside the writing side and just enjoy the reading of the book.
So the honourable mention then, The Chimney Sweeper's Boy by Barbara Vine. By the way, you said you enjoyed police procedurals. Who's your favourite author of police procedurals?
You see, that's a hard question, because I have friends who write police procedurals. Two that are jumping to mind would be Jane Casey and Jill Perdue. Now, admittedly, both friends of mine, but I recently read both of their most recent books and I loved both of them. So for anyone who likes police procedurals, go look them up.
Currently reading then, our final category of our Troika. What is it that you are engaged in at the minute?
So I have, well, I've just finished Not a Happy Family by Shari LaPena, and I love all of Shari's books. They are set in this universe of these wealthy areas of upstate New York in the Hudson Valley. And they're always about, usually about dysfunctional families or suburban neighborhoods where there's deep, dark secrets behind the veneer of respectability, which is my favorite kind of book. So Not a Happy Family is about an Easter dinner, which is it results in the death of the hosts of the dinner. But we don't know why. So we find out in the first chapter that these older couple are dead.
At the dinner?
So after the dinner. So their three adult children have been at the dinner with their partners. So that's your, you know, that's your setting. You know, surely it's going to be one of these three adult children or their partners, or there's the sort of wider family characters as well. And a bit like I was saying about The Chimney Sweeper's Boy, secrets start to come out as you discover bit by bit, hearing from the perspective of each character what's been going on. And I mean, I love Shari's books. I really liked this one. I had read a review somewhere that said, oh, they're all very unlikable characters. So I wanted to see for myself. And I was like, yeah, they're not the nice people, but they're very human. They're flawed humans. And I think a lot of us like to read about less than perfect characters, because sometimes that can be grating when you're reading a crime novel and all the characters are really sweet and perfect. That's not necessarily what you want to read. So yeah, I highly recommend this or any of Shari's books.
And you said it's told, is it told through the eyes of the character? Is it first person narrative, character by character?
It is third person from about, I think you get 5, 6, 7 characters speaking. So you get to hear, so you never get the full picture. You're piecing it together from each different character's perspective.
So you always have that untrustworthy narrator when you put it together.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so our three then, currently reading Not a Happy Family, honourable mention The Chimney Sweeper's Boy, and favourite book, Big Magic, How to Live a Creative Life and Let Go of Your Fear by Elizabeth Gilbert, and a book that clearly had the right effect because, as I said, Andrea Mara is at a point where her new book is debuting in America. It's going to be released there on August 20th. It is already out June 6th in Ireland and the UK, and that, of course, being Someone in the Attic. Andrea, thanks again.
Thank you.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.